everyone, it's me, Sarah Century, and this is the Best Issue Ever podcast, where I talk to friends and creators about some of the greatest single issue comics ever. Today's issue was chosen by Priya Saxena, one of the amazing creators of the Color of Always anthology that is currently available through A Wave Blue World, which is a great publisher too, so win-win. We're discussing Spider-Woman Volume 1, Number 10, which is written by Mark Gruenwald, drawn by Carmine Infantino and Al Gordon, colored by Watanabe, and lettered by F. Mouly. Jessica Drew has, kind of a lot going on. But what you need to know here is that she's a weird lady with weird powers, and she lives in San Francisco. Oh, and she's dating a cop named Jerry, with whom she has pretty much zero chemistry because she's maybe gay, who knows? We'll come back to that later this episode, trust me. She ends her moon bathing date with Jerry because she sees a woman flying around, out and proud, having the time of her life. This is the, moth. Just the moth. We could just call her the moth. Yeah, there's another word in her name. We'll talk about that later. We'll come back to it. Jessica tries to catch up to the moth, but she is rejected by this woman, and Jerry is pissed. Jessica doesn't care too much that he's mad, and she goes to a party later that night on the behest of Magnus, who you don't need to know about, actually. This pretty much comes across like Jessica is the out-of-place lesbian at the late 70s San Francisco key party, but her night is saved when the moth attacks. Desperate to talk to the moth about, you know, things, Jessica sexy wrestles with her in the sky. Jerry, the absolute fucking dolt, tries to shoot the moth down, but Jessica zaps him and helps the moth flee. The night ends with Jessica yet again telling Jerry that he is a dipshit, and he drives her back to the old boarding house. What happens next? Well, Spider-Woman continues for about another 40 issues. Although it is a rocky ride, it is also a pretty fun one. Jessica Drew is still lurking around the Marvel Universe and flirting with ladies today, so here's to a real one. For now, here's my guest.
Priya Saxena. I do the Patreon podcast for Bitches on Comics with Sarah, and we call it Bitches of X, and we talk about X-Men.
We're not here to talk about the X-Men, but if you all do want to listen to us talk about the X-Men, we do it a lot. So you could go over to the Bitches on Comics Patreon, which is what? patreon.com/queerspec, which is Q-U-E-E-R-S-P-E-C. Yes, I won that spelling bee. That was only one person, me. All right, so I love Spider-Woman. We're here to talk about Spider-Woman. And I'm so glad that you chose this. It's such a you comic, it feels like. And I say that as a compliment because it's a me comic too. I love this comic. It's a gay comic, I guess we'll say.
I was just excited to have the opportunity to talk about Spider-Woman with you because I know you love Spider-Woman and I love Spider-Woman and I just like this comic. So I'm very glad that you invited me to do this podcast.
I know you're one of the first guests and I'll have to have you back because I know that this isn't the only comic that you love.
There are many, many best issues ever.
I know. I'm so glad I don't have to choose. I've been like, yeah, I've been thinking about what would you choose as the best issue ever? And I'm just like, haha, I started a podcast so I wouldn't have to choose. Everybody else has to choose. And I just talk about the comics you like because I probably like them too. Nobody has chosen anything that I didn't already read and love, except for there was a manga title that I'm just now cracking into. So there has been ones that stumped me. I was like, oop, I didn't know this one. So in the future, there will be a comic that I'm actually being introduced to. But for now, Spider-Woman is here. Huge. I love this comic. It's a real rocky ride. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but I love this character. And I'm going to guess for a lot of the same reasons that you do, but you can correct me where I'm wrong. I love this character because she's totally freaking weird. Like, that's the whole story of every single issue. The tagline on the cover is, "To know her is to fear her." And yes, I am obsessed.
I love that tagline so much. And her nickname is the Dark Angel, which they, like, they don't use that nickname for her anymore, but I always love that one, too.
Yeah, I am really interested in this character and have been for a long time. So I'll talk about what I love about her. But I would love to hear, why do you love Jessica Drew? And how did you find Jessica Drew? Because this is not, it's not everybody's number one go-to, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I was trying to remember how I first got introduced to Jessica Drew. And it was kind of hard to remember. I think it might have been the Alice Cott and Michael Walsh's Secret Avengers series.
Right.
She's really, she's fun in that. She's very gay for Black Widow. And mm-hmm. so I kind of noticed that. I was interesting. And then I think I also read the Avengers Annual 10, which starts with her rescuing Carol Danvers from after Carol has had her powers drained by Rogue. Jessica and Carol are very quickly in love with each other in that. And so I liked that
holding hands.
Too.
Yeah.
I just really liked her design. It's such a great costume. Yeah. And I liked the dark flowy hair. I have one of those Marvel Tsum Tsum plushies of her. It's a nice pillow that I lay on. It's good. I had read some of those more recent Avengers comics, and then I went back and read some of the original Spider-Woman series from the 70s. And it was just such a weird series. I don't know what is going on here or what the writers are trying to do, but I just loved it. I only read, I think, the first 20 issues, but I'll have to go back and read it all at some point. But I just really liked how bizarre it was. I like that she's on the West Coast. She's in SF, I think. So that was different from the New York superheroes. At that time, I was living in the LA area, so I just liked that there was a California superhero. And I just really liked how out of place she felt. It was very relatable to me. There's a Comic Watch article by Travis Hedge Koch where they describe the 70s Spider-Woman solo as an erotic horror series. And I think that's really smart. And that's very true. That is what it is. And I like that it has all these sexy female villains coming on to Jessica Drew, and she's like, what am I doing here? And it's just very fun and bizarre.
Oh yeah, it's very strange. And that's it. I remember reading her, I would assume Bendis era, and therefore had very little interest in the character because I think that series reads a lot like she's Jessica Jones pretty much.
Yeah.
It's kind of Jessica Jones 2 Spider-Woman chapter, and it's much less gay, right? So what I always loved about Jessica Drew is that she is just a very, very, very strange person. And that's every single thing, every story that you see her in at this time. It really goes by the wayside later on, and that sucks because the Avengers need some weird characters, you know? It really counteracts people like Janet, who I love, you know? But it really helps counteract those characters, I think, if you have someone like Jessica Drew just kind of lurking in the corner being a total strange, awkward human being. I like to have an awkward person every now and again. I don't like how everybody is so smart and good at quipping. This character rules because she reaches out to people very emotionally, and I think that that's so awesome.
In the 2000s and the 2010s, kind of, they started making all the Avengers women kind of the same form, model of woman.
Yeah.
A cool badass, and
tough.
She's very competent and snarky. Well, but what if she was weird? At least Wanda has kind of been able to retain her weirdness, but I think there's a lot of similarities with her and Jessica Drew, and I kind of wish that Jessica still got to be uncanny and unnerving, because that's the thing that I really like about her.
Yeah, what I didn't like was later whenever they're oh, she has empathy powers. Why does it have to be a power? Why? She's just a strange lady who feels a lot towards other people and wants to help. That's awesome. That's a great motivation. But people are no. She's compelled by her empathy powers. And it's just no, that doesn't even make any sense. I mean, she would be empathetic. She had to go through hell. This is a person who's been raised not in the same way. You know, like, she doesn't have a lot of the social cues that, like, a lot of the other Avengers would have. And so that's part of what makes her so awesome. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, they all did get kind of tough for a little while there. But it kind of sucks whenever you read that stuff, because there are characters that are tough like that. And that's awesome. Like, Jessica Jones can be tough every time she pops up, right?
I like Black Widow. Yeah. Like Natasha Romanoff. She's cool, but, like, I don't want everybody to be her.
I know. We, of course, you mentioned her and Carol being very, very close. And I wanted to say, yeah, that even in that issue 10, there's something really cool about Jessica, because she doesn't give up on Carol, and Carol's a stranger. Like, she won't go home. She refuses to rest until she finds this woman who she saw fall. And she stays with her. She doesn't leave after she gets to the hospital. Like, she stays with her through the night. And I love her for that. I think that that's something that's so amazing, because this is the character that will do that for a total stranger and then just walk away like it was no big deal. She's a total weirdo, but that weirdness that she has gives her this extra angle, because if you grow up, obviously, in, like, a different way and you, like, socialize in a different way than, like, what is considered to be the norm, then that gives you an extra advantage in some ways of just being able to read rooms differently.
It can often be, like, a motivation for a character to, like, become a villain, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I had such an awful childhood. You all have it so good and you don't deserve it. It really shows how Jessica is, in truth, a good person. She was, like, manipulated by Hydra, and now she's just like, I'm just trying to, like, do the right thing and have a decent life.
Mm-hmm. Something that happens throughout these issues, because as you said, this series is, like, pretty rocky. Later on, actually, Anne Nesenti does a few issues towards the very, very end. So I highly recommend, as you mentioned, going back and, like, reading all the way through. Yeah, there's some good stuff to come. There's parts of this series that are really frustrating because it does seem like they don't totally know what the hell they're trying to do with this character. But there is a lot of strength in that as well, I think. And I was going to say that this is a very queer issue to me. I read it very queer. And so was the last issue, though. Like, there's, like, a few issues in this run that are just so gay. And she gravitates towards villains that are gay and, like, that are kind of misunderstood weirdos. That Spider-Man would punch them in the face and leave, right? But Spider-Woman is having this, like, whole emotional exchange with them. Last issue, it was this guy, the Needle, a theater dude, right? It's just, there's a lot of coding in it. And then he gets beaten up. You don't have to read too far between the lines to kind of get a vibe of what they're saying about this character. And he does become evil, but he's from that same place of hurt that Jessica is. And so that's the same here. She recognizes people who are coming from a place of hurt, I think. And she's, like, the best hero to deal with people who are just hurt and lashing out, I think.
The whole series is very lesbian, like, specifically. There is... part of what I like about this series is its, like, rockiness and its uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that gives room to, like, explore these kind of off-to-the-side topics, like a queer villain who is kind of sympathetic, just that sort of thing. I think when there's, like, a series that is just really good and really solid and knows what it's doing and is executing it perfectly, there can sometimes be, like, less to say about that. Well, you did it, and it's great. But then there can be a series that is uncertain and unsteady, like this one, and that can be, like, a lot more fun to dig into sometimes, where you're like, what is happening here? What's going on here? I think it can be fun. I chose this issue specifically. It is a really good just example of queer lesbian stuff in this series. It's a very good just, like, single issue to, like, point out, hey, look at all this stuff. Isn't that fun and weird?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not until later when she becomes roomies with Lindsay McCabe that mm-hmm. it really starts to get kind of off the charts with the queer vibes. But this one is, she's not, you know, I mean, here she's like dating a guy, and this is still an incredibly gay comic. Mm-hmm. So the whole response that she has to this man is incredible. She's basically like, this guy sucks. And then there's also this really funny moment later in the series, or later in the issue, where she's like, I have more in common with this woman than I have it with him, or something. And you're just like, oh, yes, you do. I don't know. This comic ruled. This is written by Mark Gruenwald. And he actually, honestly, I really like this guy's stuff for the most part. I think that even to this day, it's hard to get a consistent note out of this character. And I love that about her, though. Like, as what you were saying about, like, this first issue being so kind of bumpy, it kind of becomes a character trait of hers, like, as time goes on, that it's just this weird lady who nobody knows what to do with. And I think that that rules. And Carol loves her so much, will, like, fly across the cosmos for her. They love each other. They're totally in love, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have to get into it. I don't know if they're really ever going to make Carol Danvers out, I guess. Yeah. But it's also ridiculous that she's not out. The chemistry between her and Jessica is, like, through the roof and always has been.
I was reading the recent Captain Marvel miniseries that Anne Nocenti wrote, and Jessica Drew is in that as well, which was kind of interesting to see, because I think that Jessica Drew was the first series, Spider-Woman was the first series that Anne Nocenti wrote at Marvel. Mm. And there's a scene where Carol calls Jessica a breeder, just because, like, she has a kid. And I was like, Anne Nocenti, where did you learn that language? Those two, I always like seeing them together. It's like, I know they're never like gonna be together, but it's always sweet to see them.
At least let Lindsay McCabe be a dyke, right? Like, right? That's the one where it's just like, give me a break. Lindsay McCabe has been out here doing the work, like, since the early days. She's so queer. She sees this floundering, overly emotional Jessica who is, like, drop dead gorgeous, has no fear of her whatsoever. Like, so many people are put off by her. Lindsay McCabe loves Jessica. I think that she has a thing for superheroes, is what I'm gonna say.
That's so good. She's like, you know, I'm an actor.
I could play you in a movie. I know. Lindsay McCabe is the best. She's so great. She's not in this issue.
She's like, I'm a stunt double. I could dress up in your costume and pretend to be you. Wouldn't that be cool? That's how she tries to get women to go to bed with her, is by saying, let me try on your costume.
Let me try on your clothes. Like, it's very, very homoerotic, but she knows what she's doing. I saw her on that motorcycle with her t-shirt sleeves rolled up. She knows what she's doing.
Buff arms.
Yes. I know. I love her so much. But it's good to see Jessica before Lindsay, right? There is this wonderful relationship between those two that develops later on. But in the early days, like, Jessica really, she's struggling. Like, she's staying at a boarding house where, like, the landlady kind of hates her.
And there's this, like, old guy. I kind of forgot about him, but he's like a wizard and he's kind of like a creep.
Yeah.
And so she has to, like, deal with that. He's like a magic guy, but he's like super old, but also kind of like lecherous.
Yeah. Always has like seven women on his arm or whatever. So we have to talk about the villain in this issue real quick, just to clarify, because we're about to talk about the cover. So I wanted to say that there is a character that has a definite slur, and it's in the character's name. We are going to just call this character the Moth. If you see this comic, you will see that is, in fact, the only half of the character's name. But consider this we're going to start the petition to just get this character changed to the Moth if she ever pops up again. And she should.
I think she has popped up again, and she was called Skyne.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad that they, like, brought her back but changed the name.
Yeah, that's for the best. And, you know. But there's also this really fun little blurb, because Jessica is another trademark of Jessica during this time is she's always standing in the absolute weirdest position.
Yes!
So it's like, yeah, people are weirded out by you because you're always crouching. But anyway, she's at this big party with a bunch of rich people. I'm not quite sure. Here, I cannot quite tell what the vibe of this party is. Inside, we know that it's a little orgy-esque, I'll say. And there is a swimming pool. And behind her, there's like the moth she's kind of hovering over. And the little blurb of text, at a Hollywood party, Spider-Woman confronts a new strange being. But is she friend or foe? Such a gay headline. All right, great. This is awesome. I like this cover. How do you feel about it?
I also like it. I think it's a bit marred by like having the like slur there.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I like that Jessica looks so startled and like out of place, because mm-hmm. that's just how she feels in this comic and just in the series in general. She's doesn't really know what she's doing.
Yeah, she doesn't know what she's doing. She's like, I guess I'm hanging out in San Francisco. I'll try to get a job or something. But then she ends up dating this guy.
The romance comic thing of, oh, this is a female-led comic, so there has to be a guy that she's dating. So I think she just, like, dates the first guy that she meets.
Pretty much, yeah. She's like, oh, hey, well, he seems like he wants to date me, so I guess I'll date him. And readers, what could be more lesbian than that?
The art in this is by Carmine Infantino and Al Gordon. Carmine Infantino is usually one of my favorite artists. His art will have this kind of flowy quality and really pretty women and just interesting faces. In this comic, it's very, it looks kind of wacky, like kind of sloppy. Like, I get the sense that it might have been rushed, but it's very, it doesn't look in proportion, but I kind of like the roughness of it, because it kind of goes with the uncertainty of the story. Like, I think if the art looked super polished, it wouldn't quite fit the story as well. I actually kind of liked the kind of weirdness of the art here, even if it's not Infantino's best work, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Infantino is one of those artists that's so identifiable that you always can recognize the line work. But then there's this, it's like Jack Kirby. Jack Kirby is so identifiable, but the way that different inkers do Jack Kirby can completely change like the vibe.
I really liked the inking in this. Like, there was a lot of heavy shadows and stuff that gave a good mood.
That's what I was gonna say. I appreciate that they just black out entire parts of the page, because I always think that that's a good look. Yeah. And I think that they're moon bathing. Is that? Oh yeah, a moonlight swim. This guy is so funny in his little shorts, and he's laying on his stomach. And she's laying on her back. Oh, never mind. We got to go back, because we have to say what the title of this. Things That Go Flit in the Night. Oh my God. What a title.
And I like that, because it's about Spider-Woman and it's about the moth. So it shows how they're similar, because that's what the issue is about, is how they're kind of two of a kind. It's a story that all takes place during the course of one night specifically. Uh-huh. There's no daylight in this. It's just all at nighttime. And I thought that was really cool. And it really fit with Jessica's like mysteriousness. And there's a lot of images where, like, you see the stars in the background, and it's just, like, a really beautiful night sky with twinkling stars. And it's really that, like, 70s lesbian vampire movie kind of thing, which I know you love, and I also love. And so I liked it.
It reminds me of that vibe 100%. It's very Vampiros Lesbos as far as its setting goes. I absolutely love it. I love also that there has never been a character that seemed more gay than she does in this opening sequence, because this guy clearly has romance on the mind. And she's like, oh, are you sure that you can do that? Because aren't you sick or whatever?
The guy says, the boyfriend, his name is Jerry, whatever. He's like, ah, you know, gorgeous, I haven't done this sort of thing in years. A secluded beach, picnic at sunset, a moonlight swim. Yeah, it sure puts a man in the mood. And he's like looking at her with like a little smirk. And then she's just looking looking kind of like grumpy
at the sky.
At the sky. And she's like, yes, I like the night too. Somehow it makes me feel so peaceful, so secure. And I just love that he's like, ooh, we should have sex. And she's like, I just love the night sky. I'm such a creature of the night.
I just want to like look at the sky if that's cool. And this guy, yeah, Jerry Hunt and Jessica Drew, two people in love with the night, with the moon, with each other. And it's like, I don't think that they come across very in love.
And so like he like leans over to kiss her and she's like, Jerry, are you sure your lips have healed enough for this? Because I think last issue there was villain who like sewed his lips shut or whatever.
Yeah, so that's a gay villain, right? Like the needle sews people's mouths shut.
Well, maybe he sewed Jerry's mouth shut so that she wouldn't have to kiss him. Maybe he was being an ally. And just the next page, like, he's kissing her.
She's not even looking at him.
She's looking away at this figure, this woman who's, like, flying in the night sky. Do you know the part at the beginning of But I'm a Cheerleader where she's kissing her, like, football boyfriend?
And he's, like, licking her mouth.
And she's just, like, looking not at him, but, like, at the women, like, doing their cheerleader practice. That's exactly what's happening.
Like that music that plays like when she like sees like the other cheerleaders, and that's what happens here. It literally, she's like, look, and then he's like, what? Like, and she's like, what's that? And she goes, that's what I intend to find out. And he's like, now wait a minute.
And she runs away and puts on her Spider-Woman costume like, and flies in the air.
Out. She does not give
it's so
a
funny
shit.
Just like taking the first opportunity to like stop making out with her boyfriend and investigate this strange woman.
Yeah, she's like, oh, there's a woman in the sky. I'm going to go look at her. So bye. And he is upset. But yeah, so what is it? The moth is just beautiful. This is like a beautiful sequence.
She's described in the narration as a figure of unnatural beauty. I think the word unnatural is really key there. Because that's also how Jessica is described a lot.
Yeah.
And so it also marks that they're two of a kind here.
Yeah, I know. Unnatural. That's like such a word for queer people.
Yeah.
I'm always just like, if you hear that word, you're like, oh, I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. That's it. These comics are gay. This is a gay ass comic. Mm-hmm. She might as well just make out with this character because, I mean, that's where it's at.
I kind of like that it is all like subtext. Like,
obviously, right.
I'm not like in favor of censorship, but I think there can be something really interesting when you have a story that is about queerness, like even if it doesn't know it's about queerness, dealing with those themes but like isn't saying it outright. I was telling you earlier, I started reading The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
It's so interesting and compelling how much it's about those themes without talking about how it's about those themes. I think that can be really fun as well. So I like seeing that here too.
Oh yeah, I love that stuff. I mean, old Hollywood is like a treasure trove of characters that are clearly gay, but like they kind of can't say it. The Maltese Falcon or whatever, you have Peter Lorre, and before Peter Lorre even shows up on the screen, you have them being like, oh, he wears perfume or something. And so it's like, you already know he's gay before he even pops up. There's this movie called Young Man with a Horn where Lauren Bacall, the way that they communicate that she's like having an affair with a woman, right, is like, oh, this artist has invited me to travel to Paris with her. And you're just like, and it's ruining your marriage? Yeah, totally.
I just read this book about the movie All About Eve, and that one is also very queer.
So queer. Yeah, Eve is like the all-time classic Hollywood dyke, right? Like she's like so in love with Margot. The theater critic is gay.
Yes,
and he's
of
like,
course.
Yeah, we're going to be each other's beards, and that's like literally part of the movie. I mean, it's wild. That is a wild movie, but that's it. It's all over the place. It's all over it. Like femme fatales in classic Hollywood, they're always very queer coded, at least. They are always out for themselves and so in command of their own presence that you kind of are like she doesn't care about this guy, and it's really awesome kind of.
And that's like, also what I love about Spider-Woman. Basically every other issue the villain is like a femme fatale who like kind of wants to have sex with Jessica Drew probably, and yeah. It's great.
Yeah, and then this sequence where there's like a moon, Jessica's kind of coming up after the moth, and like the moth is kind of flying out from the moon.
It seems like she didn't see Jessica, so Jessica goes back to the beach, and I already forgot his name. The boyfriend runs over and like yells at her because he's mad that she like flew off and without him, which is fair, but also it's like, why are you even dating her? Can't you tell she's not into you?
There is that kind of guy. Like, I don't want to incriminate anyone I dated whenever I was still dating men, but it is that vibe of they really believe that they can just change that part of you or something. And that's what you get here, is like, this guy doesn't like Jessica even. It's not that he doesn't love her. He doesn't even like her very much. He just thinks that she's hot and he wants her to be what he wants her to be. But it's so obvious that she's just not what he wants her to be. And so they have this, it's about as queer as it gets, you know, like this is a lesbian dating a man is how it feels like, honestly.
Yeah, and it's like him being a cop also like kind of goes with that.
Yeah, and she's angry at the police. Like, she gets mad at them throughout this entire series multiple times. And I like that about her too, because I'm regularly pissed off at the entire concept of the police. I don't even like the idea.
I think it's interesting how he specifically is like, I never should have let you bring that costume along. Mm-hmm. The, like, costume, the Spider-Woman identity, which maybe is allowed to be queer in a way that Jessica Drew isn't. Mm-hmm. So I think that what her costume signifies is, like, interesting. And then I love what she says. She says, but Jerry, it was a woman with wings, someone like me. And then when he storms
his
off,
response,
or no, what he says is, so what? Are you going to go chasing every flying freak you see? What about me? And then she's thinking, you don't understand, do you, what it's like to be different?
And if you were in any doubt that we are talking about a queer character, the next panel she shows up with her hair so huge and she looks 100% like the most lesbian vampire I have ever seen in a comic book.
She has like the neck thingy. That's what like she had, the lady in Vampires Lesbos has, but like hers is red and Jessica's is green. It's the like neck. Jessica's hair in this series, because when she's Spider-Woman, it's actually a wig, and so like it's like long flowing dark hair, but when she's just regular Jessica, it's like kind of like a short haircut. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's cute.
The lady, Dolly, is that her name? That's also queer vibes all around. That's all I'm saying. Queer vibes all around. Yeah. Dolly is playing
like
with a dolly.
Lady at the front door of the apartment or whatever. She has this like weird doll. It doesn't come up again. Maybe it's setting up a later issue. She just has this like weird action figure that looks like a supervillain. There's something up with that. But anyway, so Jessica Drew finds out that the creepy old wizard guy like is at a party, and like he left her address if she wants to go to the party as well. It's at the Hollywood Club. And so she like puts on this sexy dress. If you're like an old guy giving that dress to a friend, that kind of feels like sexual harassment.
Oh, yep.
But that's just comics sometimes, 70s
that's comics. How is Jessica responding to it? Because she seems not interested in this man particularly, but also like she's like, oh, the looks that she gives the other party goers, it's like the whole vibe of Jessica is a lesbian at a party.
Yeah, because she goes to this party, everyone has like such contempt for her. There's these like women who are fawning over the wizard guy. He's a stage magician, which is kind of funny. But there's these, like, women who are fawning over him. He introduces Jessica to them, and they just look at her with, like, so much contempt. Everyone is staring at her like they don't want her to be there.
And she's just kind of smiling. which is kind of funny too. I mean, her whole vibe is like so funny in this. And then of course there's like, oh, let's go outside, where everybody's trying to get in the jacuzzi with each other.
Yeah, like, all these hippies, the California sexy people.
They're talking about primal belch therapy, right?
One interesting thing is that Jessica notices all the men and the women are like very put off by her and not talking to her, which is interesting because usually men are like kind of attracted to her. So I'm not really sure why that's the case here, but it kind of underscores how she seems kind of gay here. The one person who like approaches her and like talks to her is a gay guy.
Yeah, and they're not playing around with this. He doesn't walk up and say, hello, fellow homosexual. I too am a homosexual, but that's what's happening here. The two gay people are talking. And he's clearly, like, he's wearing like a red handkerchief around his neck.
He asks her, like, who does your hair? And in his thought bubble, he's like judging her hair.
Yep. Yeah, this is like a gay stereotype, but I do like that they talk.
Yeah.
Kind of making friends, you know, whatever. He's supposed to not be a good character, I guess, or something. He's supposed to be annoying.
Yeah, it seems like she finds him annoying. It's interesting that, like, the one person who has any interest in talking to her is a gay person.
This party is just wild. It's a very weird direction to go in for this comic because there's not really a huge need for it to happen, but it's just like, oh, yeah, I guess she, like, went to the orgy and also felt left out there, too. And now she sees the moth again.
The moth is
moth starts
flying, and then she starts zapping people, and the people's outfits become reshaped into, like, cocoons that are trapping them. I don't think Jessica, like, sees that. She just sees the moth and then runs inside
to,
like,
she doesn't care what's happening to anybody
else. She's like,
I'm gonna get her.
better get into my Spider-Woman costume so I can talk with her bug lady to bug lady. She doesn't say that, but she should.
And then she's like trying to get Magnus's attention, but what's the point? Magnus is a weirdo.
He just like zaps her costume on her, and then she like flies into the air and she tries to say hi to the moth, and she's like, wait, I'd like to speak with you. And then the moth is just like, the moth does not fear you. And then Jessica says, I don't want you to fear me. And then that stuck out to me. Her tagline, of course, is to know her is to fear her.
Yeah.
But, like, that's Jessica's thing, is that, like, she doesn't want to be feared. She wants to have friends and, like, be accepted and understood. And so she was so excited when she saw this person who she thought maybe could understand her.
Yeah, and this character is laughing at her and being rude, but she's also ripping her clothes off. There's just tears the midriff off and is like, and then like flies off.
Yeah.
It's flirting. You're flirting.
The moth's power is to like control the fabrics of people's clothing and like reshape it. So what she does is she's able to like unravel part of Jessica's Spider-Woman costume. And she like does this and then like laughs at her, which I think it's a really cute, evil laughing. It reminds me kind of like a Chris Claremont fetish thing, but it...
Yeah.
Well, it's this Spider-Woman identity that Jessica has crafted for herself, and now the moth is unraveling that and so kind of exposing her. So it's like Jessica being forced to like look inward. Who am I and what do I want? What does this identity like mean to me, and who would I be without it? I think something else that I also noticed is that the moth's hair is brown, which is actually Jessica's natural hair color, because in this series she dyes it black.
Right, yeah.
For some reason, I think to like escape being noticed by Hydra or whatever, her natural hair color is brown, so she shares the same hair color as the moth, which I don't think it's intentional, but I just noticed it, and I thought it was interesting.
It is, and there's this scene where Jessica is being attacked by this woman, and she tries to, like, reach out to her. Like, she has her hands on the other woman's shoulders, and, like, a very intimate gesture, frankly. And she says, I'm not your enemy. I don't even care what quarrel you have with those silly people down there. We have so much in common, you and I. We ought to be friends. This is so gay. I just don't even know how to put words to it, almost, how gay this is. And then, of course, as they're like fighting with each other, little strands of rainbow thread start pulling up from all of the different people, right? Because now she's trying to wrap Jessica in the cocoon. So she needs her thread back, I guess, is what's happening.
Yeah, it's interesting that the moth doesn't trust Jessica and doesn't really want to have anything to do with her. That's not true of, like, I think most of the female villains in this. Like, usually right. The villains are, like, kind of obsessed with Jessica. I don't know. It's maybe, like, the moth, she feels alone too, but she wants to stay alone because she doesn't think that any good can come of having a friend. And then we see that that's not the case because later in the issue, Jessica saves the moth. Well, sometimes it's good to have a friend. But it's kind of interesting to see these two different perspectives with being alone and being isolated, where Jessica is really desperate to find connection and the moth just rejects connection and just like lashes out to the people who rejected her.
Yeah, and this idea that the person, Jerry, who is like trying so hard to connect with Jessica, but in this very paternalistic way.
Yeah, like he is, but he's not. Because she tries to explain why I wanted to see this woman. And she tries to explain why that's so important to her. And he just doesn't care. He's just not listening.
No, and he opens fire on the moth. And that's the breaking point here for Jessica. Because, yeah, she's angry that he does it. He shoots his gun and hits the moth's wing, which is gross. And it's like he has no reason. Literally, his thought process, this is it. Cops suck. It's a good thing I went looking for her. A rescue is better than an apology any day. This guy is like so horny to shoot this woman, you know?
Also,
like, it's so like gross.
So disgusting to say about someone who you're dating and
I know
should care for.
Ugh. I know, this guy's very frustrating. The worst, frankly. Ugh, what a jerk. She's angry about it. She says, Jerry, no, and, like, shoots him, like, zaps him.
Yeah,
and she doesn't mean to hurt him.
Venom blast.
But she doesn't care when he goes down. Meanwhile, she's, like, doing everything she can to catch the moth so that the moth doesn't get hurt.
I think the use of powers and stuff is interesting here. Well, Jerry shoots the moth with a gun, which is very, like, masculine and very police and stuff, and he hits her in the wing, which is a part of what makes her supernatural and kind of like what makes her queer. You could kind of see that as an attack on the moth for being queer. And then Jessica retaliates by using her venom blast, which is also like a part of what makes her supernatural. And so I don't know, like kind of using that against him and kind of being in solidarity with this other lady.
Yeah, and she doesn't give a shit about this guy at this point. Like, she takes the moth away, helps her regain her footing.
Yeah, she like sets the moth down under a tree and just kind of sits with her. And then when the moth comes to again, she just like runs away.
Jess is like, I could turn her in, but no, like I'm not doing that.
I really like the scene where Jessica is looking at the moth's wings and she sees that they're real, like they're a physical part of her. There's I've been like watching like Cronenberg movies, so it kind of reminds me of that, kind of the miraculousness of unusual things that bodies can do. And it just feels like a really lovely way of Jessica kind of again just recognizing someone else's queerness and being like, oh, it's like so cool and interesting and kind of like me too.
Jessica thinks it's awesome.
Yeah.
Jessica looks at them and is like, that's cool, like awesome.
You know what else it reminds me of actually is I just saw the movie Love Lies Bleeding. Which, have you seen it?
No, I don't have a theater anywhere near me. I'm going to have to move just so that I can be near a theater again.
It's a good movie, and it's about this lesbian relationship, and one of the women is taking, like, steroids or whatever. Her body is transforming, and it's also about seeing, like, someone else's body transform and kind of being like, whoa, that's so awesome. So it reminds me of that.
Oh, yeah. She's having a moment. I love the fact that her inner monologue, but even though she spurns my friendship like the others, I still feel like I have more in common with her than with them. And then she says, police, I'd better keep my distance. I think I see Jerry's car. And then this is how they end the comic.
Yeah, no, like, when I realized that this is how they end the comic, Mark Gruenwald must have known what he was doing.
Yeah, this is so gay. So he's mad. So here you are, when the devil came over you. And she says, what came over me? Do you know what you almost did? And he says, yeah, I tried to help you. And you shot me with your blasted venom. So that's another part where it's like he's disgusted by her Spider-Woman-ness, which is, once again, very queer metaphor. And then she says, well, then there's not much point in talking to you. Take me home, Jerry. And then it says, Jerry Hunt and Jessica Drew, two people in love. So it's like turning around that earlier part. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good.
That's the end. Take me home, Jerry. Like, I've had enough of your ass for one night.
Yeah. I love how Jessica's like eye marks in the mask are drawn in this. It's kind of like wobbly and strange looking. And I love it. But yeah, no, I love how it ends with them, like, not liking each other. And she just wants to be with this woman so much. And it's like, oh, Jessica.
This is a character who, like, later dates men, of course. But to me, I'm just like, she's dating a man here. It doesn't make her less gay, right? But I don't know. This character doesn't seem to have any interest in this guy. And she never really does through this entire series. So I always think that this is a very fascinating love interest.
Part of the thing that upsets Jessica about her powers is she has these pheromone powers that make women like dislike her and like kind of mad at her or like jealous of her, and they make men attracted to her but also kind of scared of her. And she's just like really distraught about having these powers that she can't control that makes men into her. I mean, I guess that does happen to like lesbians who are attractive to men but like don't want men. It's so real of kind of being uncomfortable with being like, well, these guys are into me but I'm not into them, and like, how do I like deal with that? How do I like be nice about that?
And it's something that's wrong with you, right? Like, that's kind of how it was, I think, for me a little bit whenever I was still dating men, was just like, well, it's like, even though I had dated women already and like had the level of attraction, there was like no comparison, right? But I don't hate men. Mm-hmm. So thereby, I should at least try to date them, because that is that's like the normal thing for me to do.
Because it would be rude not to.
It would be rude not to. Which is like absurd,
but that's just kind of how you're taught to think. And I think Jessica would really relate to that.
That's it. When you read this comic, it really reminds me of that era, I guess. And just, yeah, totally. Like, dating guys who, like, just don't know why you won't just be normal, I guess. And you're just like, yeah, because I'm gay.
Because I'm a Spider-Woman.
Because I'm Spider-Woman. And to know me is to fear me. Yeah, I don't know. I love this. I love these issues. And as we said, it's kind of like hit and miss series overall, but I really appreciate Gruenwald's work on this series. And I love Jessica. I really love this woman, you know, like, I do relate to her a lot, especially for somebody who like tried to date men kind of, and it just didn't take. That idea of just, I'm doing this because I'm kind of in between things. You know how, like, there's that scene in did you watch the Bly Manor series?
No, I didn't.
Well, there's a scene where, like, she's getting fitted for her wedding dress, Danny, right? Who's, like, one of the all-time lesbians. And she's getting fitted for her wedding dress. And the person who's, like, putting the dress on her, they look at each other and they have this charged moment between them. But the whole time, everybody behind her is, like, talking about how she's, like, is going to be so happy being married to this guy. I know what that feeling is. And that's the vibe of Jessica Drew in this series. It changes over time. Anybody who is like, oh, Jessica's bi, it's like, yeah, totally. She's dated a bunch of guys, like, at this point. But I will say that as a lesbian, I definitely related to this story, being like, oh my god, right, yeah, that was me. I guess this guy just likes me so much, and all of my relationships with women are very rocky because I'm actually emotionally invested, I guess. And so you kind of are trying to take a security or something like that. There's no security in that life, right? Like, that's kind of the thing that you have to realize. There is no security. Those guys are going to realize that you're a lesbian and not that into them at some point, and it's going to make them very upset. And so you have this kind of, you're like walking a tightrope, kind of. And I feel like that's where she's at in this story. So I don't know. It hit me harder than I thought it was going to revisit this. So I'm really glad that you pitched this one to me.
I'm glad that you got something out of reading this one too. The one thing Jessica Drew, like, nowadays is very different from who she was at this point. The one thing that is like really gay of her is to like have a baby, like without any man,
who's
just
the
like
dad?
Be a single yeah. mom just because she wants to.
And who's there for her? Carol.
Yeah.
Carol is the person who shows up while she's giving birth, and like she doesn't make it to her, but Carol's fighting the whole time to get to her side.
Carol is the dad that stepped up.
Yeah, and that's different for Carol because we made so many jokes about what a deadbeat dad she is in the movies, but she's just like, bye, I'm going to space. And then she comes back and she's like, why is everybody so mad at me? I was just in space for 10 years. And it's like, yeah, because you have a family. Like, yeah, but in this, she definitely is the dad that steps up 100%. And they're in love. I don't know what to tell anybody. I have been always like, yeah, I guess, whatever. But then you look at those characters and you're like, they're just in love. In the Kelly Thompson run of Captain Marvel, there's this really wonderful scene where Jessica forces Carol to get checked out. Like, Carol's having like a health powers issue. I don't remember exactly what. And Carol's talking about how stupid it is that she has to do it. And like, Jessica looks at her with so much love and is just like, Carol, shut up. Just let people help you. Like, shut the fuck up. That moment is like, there's so much love between them. So in some ways, it doesn't matter if they become like canonically a couple or something. Like, it doesn't really matter because there's those moments that are so meaningful anyway. Yeah. But
in this,
if nothing else, Spider-Woman should be out, like, at this point, because every writer seems to be in on the fact that she's at least bi, right?
In this and the Senti series, Jess is a little bit, like, offended by, like, Carol, like, calling her a breeder, and she's, like, kind of annoyed that Carol has to, like, do this talk at a school or something, but then Carol gets sucked away into a black hole or whatever, and Jessica is, like, really desperate trying to find someone to help, and I love that it's, like, Jessica being, like, well, I'm annoyed at you, but obviously I'm going to try my best to rescue you because they're in love.
Mm-hmm. They are in love. That's my conclusion.
In conclusion, they're in love.
In conclusion, I love her so much. I love this series. I hope that people do check this out because it's an underrated series, I would say. It's basically that, like, you're not going to necessarily be like, wow, this is a damn masterpiece, like, through the whole thing, because all of the things that we noted about it being a little rocky, this is one of the better issues, just to be clear. But it still is a lot of fun. And it's fun whenever she meets up with Spider-Man, because you see this huge difference between their personalities. I love her because you can tell the writers don't know what to do with her, but then that becomes who she is.
Yeah,
she's like,
part
what
of
am I
why
doing?
The, like, unsteadiness of the series works is because she also doesn't know what she is or what she's doing, and so it matches that vibe very well.
Yes, this is a great comic. I hope everybody checks it out, if nothing else, just to be like on our petition that we're starting, that's just like, Jessica Drew is a bisexual or perhaps a lesbian, depending on what era you're dipping
yes.
into.
I also wanted to add, part of the reason I like got attached to this character is that I had a headcanon for her as biracial and half Indian. Mm-hmm. Just because I saw her with the dark hair, her short hairstyle is like, it's kind of like mine when I have my hair short, like I do now, how it kind of gets like kind of curly and poofy. And I think it would be interesting for her because she is a British character, which I think people forget now, but like she is. Yeah. And I think it would be interesting for her to like be half white British and half Indian. I just think that would be fun. So that would be my dream casting for like a MCU or Sony or whoever has the rights to Jessica Drew. I don't even know.
And there's so much like, oh, she's so strange.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Like, that idea of like the xenophobia, right, is like kind of almost baked into her character already.
Yeah, that as well.
Yeah, interesting. So this is a great comic. You have also, with your own brain, made a comic that is like, you're part of, obviously, The Color of Always, which has gotten a second printing and has been, what, won awards now? Like, this is a huge comic. You are one of many creators, but it is like one of the best reviewed comic anthologies I've seen over the last few years. It seems like everybody picked that one up. So, how are you feeling? Because we talked about it a little bit on Bitches of X whenever a little bit closer to whenever the comic had been released or re-released, I believe. But, you know, how's it going? How's that kind of panned out?
I was really happy to work on that. I felt really good about the story I was able to contribute. And the artist, Jenny Fleming, she did an amazing job. I'm really glad that people liked that story. And it's really cool to, like, have my story along with, like, a lot of other really great comics, like, by really great creators.
Yeah. So, let's see. How can we wrap this up? I was going to say Spider-Woman. What about this character do you think is going to fuel you going forward? Because I know that Color of Always is not going to be the last comic you write.
Yeah. I was thinking about the kinds of stories that I like to write, trying to find, like, a connective line through them. And I think the thing really is just, like, women obsessed with each other to an unhealthy degree, which is definitely the kind of situation that Spider-Woman would find herself in, looking at different, like, female characters and maybe the things that they're repressing and how that repression does not go well for them. I'm working on a couple things, but we'll see. I have one last question for you, which is, what, like, classic work of lesbian literature should Jessica Drew read?
Carmilla.
So true, yes.
She would love Carmilla, and she's gonna follow it up with Haunting of Hill House, right?
Yes.
She would love Carmilla.
Yeah, I also would say that. Also, like, Jessica is very, like, Therese Bellavette. Like, she's so, like, flung out of space. So she might enjoy reading Price of Salt.
Yeah, I think that would make her feel a lot of feelings.
I think the sweetness of that book would be good for her.
I know, it would be. Come on, cuties.
Aww.
All right. I love this. All right, this was so fun. Thank you so much for joining me for this. You're one of the first people I wanted to talk to on this podcast because I always love to hear what you have to say. You have great, great, great opinions on comics, and I just love chatting with you. It's always great.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to listen to all the other episodes of this podcast because I'm sure they'll be great, and then I'll get to read the best issues ever.
Yeah. Yeah, so everybody, you can find me literally nowhere because I don't do social media very much, but you could go to sarahcentury.com and sign up to my newsletter where I will send you updates sometimes. Not even that too often.
And she also includes photos of her pets and they're very cute, so I recommend it.
Yes. Yes, there are almost always photos of one of the 8 pets that live in this house. There's 4 rabbits, 4 cats. 3 of the cats are mine. 1 is my brother's. And they're all huge, huge personalities. I can't believe they all fit into one house. So I will tell you all stories about it. And how would the people of the Best Issue Ever audience find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter or Blue Sky at Letters of Priya. But also, probably you should just subscribe to the Bitches on Comics Patreon so you can listen to my and Sarah's X-Men episodes.
Mm-hmm. They're fun. We talk about the Dark Phoenix saga, and it goes on for episodes and episodes. It's really great, and I loved that we gave it so much time because I feel like I've heard people talk about it a million times, but I've never heard somebody be like, all right, here's like 9 episodes. They're all like 2 hours plus. We're going to like dissect this, you know? So it was really fun to do. So I'm glad that we did that too.
We experienced the Dark Phoenix saga for longer than Jean Grey experienced it.
Yeah, we were in it for like over a year, and it was just wild to keep coming back to it and be like, ah, this is so good. And that's basically, I love that vibe of a conversation. And of course, we just recently did the X-23 series by Mariko Tamaki. We only made it through the first half, and the episode is like 3 hours long. But you're going to walk away from that episode being like, these two love this comic.
Yes,
so that's a best issue ever, too.
Yeah.
And so it is that we wrapped another episode of Best Issue Ever. I have been your host, Sarah Century. This podcast is recorded in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It is edited by me. The theme music is provided by Earth Control Pill, whose work can be found at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com. I do not want to deal with ads at all, so if you also don't want to deal with ads, please consider supporting the podcast by rating and reviewing and or signing up at the Ko-fi, which is ko-fi.com/Sarah Century Podcast. Finally, you could support my other ventures, including the narrative horror podcast Medusa Mask, as well as my work through Queerspec, including the Bitches on Comics podcast and the Decoded Horror Channel podcast. Visit my website at sarahcentury.com to sign up for my newsletter for updates. Oh, and I'm a horror writer, so pick up my short story anthology, A Small Light and Other Stories, not to be confused with the Nat Geo series, through Weird Punk Books, or pretty much wherever else you get books. Thanks for being here, folks. Cheers.